Welcome, everyone, to the Bullen Hawk Sports Show. I'm CJ Hawk, joined by the birthday boy, DJ Benny the Bull. And I apologize that we won't be able to have a big party for you or a big celebration, at least in person, but maybe virtually we can have some sort of fan party to celebrate your birthday, because that you deserve a party.
Thank you very much. Good to be back. It's been 2 weeks since we've been able to formally record together, come out with a full episode.
Yeah, because we did a trailer last week.
Yeah, worked on trailer and had a bonus and a coverage for a certain team.
Yeah, we had the Australian Open bonus, so to speak, and then we had the Manchester City and Fulham bonus last week.
I always love talking Man City with you.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, this weekend Manchester City and Arsenal play, so maybe we could do one together for that.
Yeah, how about it?
Because Arsenal is your favorite team, so.
Right, I'm actually on them right now.
And.
Bottom feeders. Well.
They're not doing very well.
At first, they weren't, though. Maybe you get a chance with the as the club for the women's side, as they are doing much better.
Well. Since this is our 60th official episode of the show, we decided to bring back a former segment that we had that we kind of stopped doing for a while, which is the first five. And in case you forgot, the first five, very simply put, is that DJ Benny Bull and I both find two articles, or it could be simply watched on TV. It doesn't have to be an article. And then a fifth one that we both watch or read, and we do that together. So five total, hence the name First Five. And to begin this week's reintroduction of the first five, the first one I have is from The Athletic, by The Athletic staff, and it is titled Novak Djokovic, Daniil Medvedev to meet in an Australian Open men's final. And also, I want to mention women's final two, Jennifer Brady and Naomi Osaka. Those are the two Australian Open singles finals. And this is looking for Djokovic, his ninth win in the Australian Open. That is his best major and Grand Slam. And for Medvedev, it's going to be his second appearance in a Grand Slam final. He was in the 2019 U.S. Open and lost to Rafael Nadal in five sets. So he's looking to get his maiden Grand Slam against Djokovic in this one. And Medvedev has only lost two sets so far in his run to the Australian Open final. He's been playing very well. And both of them, Djokovic has as well. Djokovic was a little bit more iffy. He complained a little bit about injury earlier, that he might have had to drop out against Milos Raonic in the fourth round. But he's able to battle through that and continued on to making these finals again. And I'm rooting for Medvedev in this one. I want someone new to win a Grand Slam in the men's side. I'm a big fan of him. He is really good. And hopefully can upset Djokovic. So I'm rooting for. I'm a fan of both of them, so I won't be angry about either one. But I'm rooting for Medvedev in this one. And on the women's side, I'm rooting for Naomi Osaka. I'm getting tired of the same people winning all the time. It's getting a little bit more parity. Naomi is looking for her fourth Grand Slam win. This is Jennifer Brady's first ever appearance in a Grand Slam final. And I'm not a big fan of her, so I'm hoping that Naomi can defeat her in straight sets to win her fourth. She is excellent on the tennis court and also excellent offside the tennis court with her charity work and making people for equal rights. She does a lot of different stuff on and off the court. I think she's going to win. And that has to do for my tennis coverage. In case you want to learn more about the first and second rounds, I did a bonus one earlier last week. And that concludes our tennis coverage for a while, because most of them aren't available unless the game matches, unless it's like a big tournament like Wimbledon or US Open or Australian or French Open. So we won't be able to talk really about it until the next one. But enjoy talking a little bit about the Australian Open. And DJ Brownie Bull, is your turn now.
Off we go. My first one I'd like to do is for Arsenal. Don't worry, it's also for Manchester City. That's right, Arsenal, Manchester City are set to face off this weekend. And wondering how to watch, discuss a little bit about injury news, starts, predictions, and all that. It's tough to, we don't have to give predictions. This is very eagerly anticipated, and this courtesy of Yahoo Sports. So this Sunday at 10:30, I was hoping that they'll be able to push that further, as you know, some games, you know, usually they should have won on early morning, or it could be the usual time at noon on NBC proper. Yet this is not to be, as this historic, well, eagerly anticipated matchup will begin at 10:30 local Chicago time on Peacock Premium and take place at Emirates Stadium still. So the story here is that Aubameyang, he last weekend against Leeds scored a hat-trick. Very amazing for Arsenal themselves. And if you're wondering who is leading him in terms of management, Arsenal is run by their manager Mikel Arteta. And Arteta is quite funny that he is a former Man City assistant under Pep Guardiola, who is the current manager for Man City. And so this clash right here, you know, very friendly rivalry. So it's nothing short, is that going to be nothing short of rough and tough. Both very tough teams. This is the Premier League, and we know that this doesn't get old. And this rivalry is going to continue to brew. So where to start for City? They've won 12 games in a row. So they actually been the history, the moment makers in Europe right now for the Premier League. And they have a 10-point lead, and that is in the rankings, in the top of the table. So Kevin De Bruyne and Sergio Aguero, two of CJ Hawk's favorites and my favorites as well. They're back, they're fit, they're ready to roll. I know that De Bruyne had a scare with COVID, and so he's quite recovered and good to go, healthy. Very good news. And that, so their playmakers, defense should look a lot better. And they'll be ready even more, even though they've been on a 12-game streak. And it's, and according to the writer here, their words, it's hard to see when they will drop any points, any more points this season. And so, before we continue, they do have, Arsenal does have one concern in their squad, and that is under their star central midfielder, Thomas Partey, wink, wink, we mentioned Partey earlier. the concern is his hamstring and thigh injuries, which he has not been able to recover since last summer. They had a rival matchup against Atletico Madrid. And for Man City, De Bruyne coming off the bench should be a big, it's more positive looking for Man City, as, I mean, they've been without them, without, you know, two of their stars. So, yeah, they've still been able to hit a streak in the win column. So, looking to be dominant. And last but not least, their prediction is that it is tough to see how Arsenal can win this, yet a draw is actually very possible. You have so many options in a squad, which, like I said, they do. City will find a piece of magic again to win. So they pick Arsenal 1, Man City 2 with the victory, going to Man City. Once again, you can cast it at Premium this Sunday, 10:30. Don't miss out.
All right, my next article. First, they both are people who passed away, so not a happy topic. First is, I want to give a shout out to Rush Limbaugh. I know he was controversial depending on your political opinion, but he changed the radio, talk radio forever. He probably pretty much, in his sense, invented political talk radio. He was on the Rush Limbaugh Show. He hosted it for over 30 years. And he had millions and millions of fans. And I want to give a shout out to him. And I never said that the Blanc Sports Show leans political any either way. So if someone says I should have said someone else, oh well. I'll just give a shout out, deserved it, just like Ruffier Ginsburg deserved a shout out, anyone on those lines that made a big impact.
I second that.
And then the next person is relating to sports, and that is Vincent Jackson. I was a fan of him. He is best known for playing with the San Diego Chargers for 6 years, and then he ended his career with the Tampa Bay Bucks. And he was a three-time Pro Bowler, twice for the Chargers, once for the Bucks. He had 6,000. He caught for 1,000 yards, 6 seasons. He, growing up, when you fought the San Diego Chargers, for me personally as a kid, you fought of Philip Rivers, Vincent Jackson, and Antonio Gates. Those are the three guys that I most fought of when I associated with the Chargers. And Vincent Jackson tragically passed away a few days ago in Florida at a Homewood Suites in Bradenton, Florida. And very sad, he was dealing with chronic alcoholism and concussions at the time of his death. They said he was not living with his family, according to ESPN. And there was concern that he might have had CTE, and thus his family donated his brain to science to be looked at. So we'll see if he was dealing with CTE. And this is just a horrible epidemic, horrible CTE. And I just get sad every time I see that it took a life and that it's still having a big impact. And it's always tragic when someone, for example, he was dealing with chronic alcoholism, and he couldn't get help. That's also tragic. And thoughts and prayers and good wishes go out to the family of Vincent Jackson. Only 38 years old.
Yes, it's far too young. When you don't reach old age, especially even sadder, especially, and that, like, something that can be prevented, or, you know, something that prize is like at the nick of time, like this can just strike, and you know, you won't like really expect it. Though any type of brain injury or disease or any brain-related illness is just very, it makes it very difficult since it's really, you know, it's part of your central nervous system, and that's how, you know, it controls, you know, everything, and without it, you know, it's, you're not complete, so, like, just something to attack, like, out of nowhere, and that's definitely tragic, and I can discuss off air, like, you know, something that's affected, you know, my family before. And, you know, someone could appear healthy, you know, whole time, though, like, outside of, like, you know, externally or just, like, all other places, like, you wouldn't have known. It would be hard to tell that they have a brain illness. And that's especially the case for many NFL players and how they, like, later on they figured out, like, they may not have had, like, a really horrible concussion, but, like, they had, like, enough, too many small concussions, just too many concussions, blows to the head or whatever, very similar to what happens in pro wrestling and all that, like, can definitely affect, like, your brain activity, and too many of that is not good, so, like, that is a common cause, and some, you know, they might not be, you know, wear through wear and tear on the field, on a football field necessarily, yet, you know, they definitely figure out later on, or don't want to get, like, treatment. Just hard to determine, like, what caused it. That's the worst thing, so could totally understand, the sadness that can be out of coming out of that, and yeah, I totally agree. That is tragic. So, now to pay respects and say thank you to him for all contribution supports, as we are the topic of this program. On top of that, just prayers for him. With that, move on to more on the first five. And this one is on U.S. soccer and how it's seemingly, finally, taking diversity seriously. And the question is, will it work? Is from courtesy of Caitlin Murray of Yahoo Sports. And we know that in the background, it's one nation, one team, united. Now they added United Against Racism. Part of their slogan, they added that white lettering on the black background, basically showing solidarity and, you know, a symbol for this whole cultural movement, you know, BLM, and simply, you know, being against systemic racism in a nation, and they're trying to affirm that by adding that. Yet, you know, it's been under controversy, and, you know, I've said that their events manager, Alex Ross, and also a black woman, falling short of that. The question lies, what did United Against Racism really mean, and how the Federation was planning to back that up? They asked their black employees for input, and said that they're taking the bit aback that employees inside them, especially those of color, weren't asked about it when it impacted us the most, Ross told Yahoo Sports. And continue with that, they have on their agenda, they claim that they have, you know, with board president Cindy Harlow Cohn, received an invitation for a Zoom call on the one item the intent of being race, and they call it the copying conversation. And 150 staffers, a huge Zoom call. Most of them listened, and then there's ones that spoke, and they had one who is Mexican American, Ileana Gutierrez, who is the Fed's U.S. Soccer's medium and broadcast operations manager, said that she was cringing. She cried on the call. She shared her own perspective. That rooting for both Mexican and American national teams wasn't that the same from everyone else who spoke on the call. And then Drew Stewart, the sporting director for them, said it definitely served as a moment of reflection for the organization. I think a lot of our colleagues had no idea what some individuals were experiencing. So they hear it firsthand, you know, that's what is the story here, that they're listening and actually, you know, want to move forward. As we talked about with superstar GK and international superstar Hope Solo, as I said that week about her, you know, being, you know, bullied or just, you know, not accepted as, you know, herself, and really being the change that is needed. So this is all completely under the same umbrella. You know, the fact that U.S. soccer, you know, being too, whether too white or too male for too long, they need more diversity. And now, in this case, we have women, you know, especially just people of color involved in the organization is pretty nice. And if you want to read more, I'll go on. So we'll hear more about U.S. soccer soon as we have She Believes Cup has just started. And yeah, we will cover that on a separate episode.
Well, we had one fifth and final one planned, but kind of just to give credence, I decided to make an executive call and wish happy birthday to two people who were very important to me and DJ Bang the Bull, one in particular. We want to give birthday shout out to our good friend Julia, who has been a guest twice on the Bullhawk Sports Show covering Chicago White Sox. And also heavily involved at the Colin Show, my past radio show. And she also had a radio show.
Isn't it crazy saying that now?
Yeah, it's weird saying like former radio show, but that's the truth though. And also give a birthday shout out to my friend Alyssa with an E, who's a listener to this program, especially for the Blackhawks talk. And happy birthday to her as well. And also, one final birthday shout out before we can end this segment. Give a birthday shout out to Nikola Jokic, the star player for the Denver Nuggets. Happy 26th birthday to the big man. Welcome, one and all, to the Bullhawk Sports Show. This is CJ Hawk bringing you more Premier League coverage for this week for Fulham and Manchester City. Starting off with Manchester City's dominating performance and fantastic overall for Manchester City, Pep Guardiola, in defeating Jose Mourinho at home at the Etihad. 3-0 drubbing. Let's get into it right now. This was a great win for City. We are further cementing that we look like serious contenders to win the Premier League this year. And I probably would not have said that at the beginning of the year. We started off inconsistent, a little bit slow. The hopes weren't that high. I was worried about Liverpool, the defending champions. They look fantastic 2 years in a row and made the look again great this year. And there were our teams you could look at too as contenders. Leicester has been good. Last year they started off very well and almost made it pretty far in the standings table. They did very well. Then our teams you could always look at, like the classics, the Man Uniteds and Tottenhams. But Manchester City, ever since November, we have looked dominant and have not lost since then. And we have been on a huge roll, getting wins and a few draws to go our way. Fantastic run of late. First for the lineups between the Spurs and City. First for City in goal, Ederson. And our final goal, to get us a 3-0 W. Kat wants to talk about Ederson's kick. Unbelievable. We'll get to that later, though. Don't want to spoil it yet. The defenders, John Stones, Alexander Shinchenko, Emerick Laporte, Joel Cancelo, midfielders, Ilkay. Can't stop scoring goals, Gundogan, Rodrigo, Bernardo Silva, forwards, Raheem Sterling, Gabriel Jesus, and Phil Foden. Then for Tottenham, their lineup. In goal, Hugo Lloris. Defenders, Davinson Sanchez, Eric Dier, Chepet Tangala, Ben Davies, midfielders, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, Son Ming-hoon, Eric Lamela, Lucas Moura, Tanguy Ndombele, and forward, Harry Kane. And that was the lineups for both squads. We might as well fast forward right away to the dramatics early on in the 23rd minute between both sides when Rodrigo and City got an opportunity to get a penalty kick to put us on the board. There was a foul on Gundogan by Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. This one, was it a foul? I think it was. I mean, I'm a City fan, of course I'm going to say probably be biased. But I think it was the right call to give a foul on Højbjerg to Gundogan. But it could be debated, and I will be willing to debate someone if they're a Spurs fan or not a City fan, or just want to give me the facts and say, well, I don't think this is a foul. But for personal opinion, I'll say it was. And Rodrigo got the opportunity. He was chosen to click the penalty kick and got it past Hugo Lloris, 1-0 City. Good job by Rodrigo to give us the 1-0 lead. So at halftime, it was 1-0. That's how Tottenham plays. They haven't been scoring very much lately. Harry Kane being hurt, he came back. Him and Sung have been basically the two guys who've been scoring at all. Gareth Bale hasn't done anything since re-signing and coming back to the club for first time in years. A lot of the other guys haven't done anything. They've been hurt with injuries, but all teams can say that, not just Tottenham. And when Harry Kane and Sung don't get an assist or don't score, the chances of winning have been for a while slim. And this was in our case where they didn't get on the board. So Song and Eric Kane never got an opportunity to add their name to the box score in goals or assists today. And Harry Kane was the closest for the first half for the Spurs. He had a spectacular free kick, but it struck the goalpost to miss. That was our best chance in the first half for the Spurs. 5 minutes after halftime, so the 50th minute, Gundogan doubled our lead to make it 2-0. Hit a left foot shot that got past Hugo Lloris. After a great job by Raheem Sterling, he got it into the pitch, got it to Gundogan, 2-0 for City. And I am proud of Gundogan. He has been fantastic this year. I don't know what's going on, because he's a good player. I liked him for a number of years as I've been a City fan. But this year, due to the injuries of Sergio Aguero and Kevin De Bruyne, Gundogan has stepped up big time and been one of our biggest goal-scoring threats. And in the league itself, one of the biggest goal-scoring threats, where if you told me earlier Gundogan was going to be the man scoring almost every game, I would have been surprised. Then finally, the last goal of the game for us to make it 3-0 and seal the W was the one I talked about earlier. The fantastic job by goalkeeper Ederson. So Ederson had a goal kick. He kicked it brilliantly far straight. Got right to Gundogan. Sanchez was like, oh no, the defender, and he fell on his butt. And Gundogan got past him, easily past Hugo Lloris to make it 3-0. And his second goal of the match. He's just been on a tear. And that got us a win to 53 points, first place in the league. They can get to 10 clear of Leicester if they win their match in hand at Everton on Wednesday. And the Spurs now are 9th with 36 points. Yikes. Not good for them. So next matches are 17th Wednesday versus Everton on the road for us at Goodison Park. And the Spurs on February 21st versus West Ham at London Stadium, a London derby. That concludes the Manchester City and Tottenham Hotspur recap. Now we're going to move on to the next one between Fulham and Everton. This was a magical game. I am still in shock. I am still dancing, hypothetically, not realistically, but dancing in my mind for this W. We finally got a win. Fulham, way to go. We haven't gotten a win since Leicester. Months ago. I want to say that was in November. That was the last time we got a win. And we beat in West Brom a few weeks before that. So we'd beat West Brom and Leicester, and that was it. Our two wins on the year. But now we can add a third to it with utter dominance against Everton. And on the Peacock channel, which I watched this game on, they mentioned Everton had to play against Tottenham in a heated game earlier in the week where they had to go deep in extra time. Some made out of gas, lethargic. If I could give a crap, we got the W. I don't care how we won it. We finally won our third win of the year. And next week, hopefully we can get to the fourth win when we play against... I have to double check who we play. But I believe it's a winnable game. It might be Newcastle. But I'll double check that when we get to the end of this recap. First for lineups, for Everton, at Goodison Park at home. In goal, Robin, Olsen. Defenders, Mason, Holgate, Lucas, Dingue, and Godfrey, same as Coleman. Midfielders, Abdoulaye, Decore, Andre Gomes, Tom Davies, Richarlison, Giffey, Sugerson, and James Rodriguez. That was lineup for Everton. For Fulham, in goal, Areola, defenders, Kanate, Joachim Anderson, Tosin, Ola Nia, midfielders, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who was not horrible in this game. He's had a few good performances in a row, so I'm not going to say Ruben Vizilman-Cheek this time. That moniker will be saved for the next time he goes missing. Mario Lamina, Emil Lookman, Harrison Reed, forwards, Bobby Reed, and Josh Maja. In his first ever start for the club, the Nigerian made his imprint on this match with 2 goals.
Great job at Maja. I want to give him the credit. I also want to give credit to the defense. Harrison Reed, Emma Lookman, they're not defensemen, but they were reasons why we played hard. And then for defenders, I want to give credit to Ola Nia, Tosin, Joakim Andersen, Kenny Tete. Tete played great in his defense. He was focused a lot on the goal and the goal defense on Lucas Dingé. He and Dingé were in a big battle defensively, and he's able to neutralize Dingé. And I was very proud of Tete. He'd come back strong after coming back from injury. He's been in good form. And Joakim Andersen, the captain, as he normally does, led us great defensively. And Tosin looked good. Olenia looked good. Honestly, no one looked bad in this game, which is saying something. We've had a lot of games where there was clearly someone who played very poor. This game, there's no one that stands out to me as playing really poor. So good to talk about positives, not negatives. And the first goal occurred in... So at halftime, it was 0-0. And in the 48th minute, Jos Maja, assisted by Ola Nia, to get his first goal of his film career, and first goal for us, taking 1-0 lead. And they mentioned the commentators that this was a pairing of two Nigerians, the Nigerian Ola Nia's assist to the Nigerian Jos Maja, which is cool. That's a cool tidbit. And great job by both of them, set it up. You get Jos Maja a relatively easy goal past Robin Olsen to give a 1-0 lead. And our second and final goal occurred in the 65th minute when Jos Maja scored a second of the match. Great passing by Harrison Reed and Rari Lamina. Played very strong in this match. And our substitutions were, Jos Maja was substituted pretty soon after his second goal in the 73rd minute. He was substituted for Ivan Carvalero, who didn't really do anything in this match. He wasn't fantastic in his limited time of substitution, but I think he should be coming in limited amounts of minutes. He shouldn't be playing 90 minutes all the time because he's not good enough, in my opinion. And I didn't mind only seeing him for 15, 20 minutes instead of 90 minutes. Then Anguissa came in the 83rd minute for Lookman. And also Mario Lamino left. He looked a little bit kind of beat up, and he looked like he needed to walk it off, so they substituted him out for safety for Josh Anuma, who only played like 5 minutes, and he picked a yellow card in his 5 minutes, which is funny. At pretty much the end of the game was pretty much all over except the final whistle. Anuma got in a tussle with Everton's Michael Keane. Him and Keane got in a tussle, so both were given a yellow card. Michael Keane was also a substitute in 56 minutes, so funny. Both substitutes got the yellow cards. And Fulham got the 2-0 win. Just great job overall. Great win. Moving on to our next match of the season, which will be taking place on Wednesday against, wait for it, Burnley at Turf Moor on the road. Hopefully Fulham can get that W to make us have 21 points on the season. And now we'll only be, if we win and Newcastle lose their next one, we'll only be 4 behind. And then the weekend, if we win, Newcastle lose, we'll only be 1 behind. So if we win on Wednesday, Newcastle doesn't play until the weekend, we'll have a good chance to win. And also, Monday the 15th, I am rooting big time for Chelsea to defeat Newcastle, because that will make sure they stay at 7 ahead of us. Newcastle not 10 if they win that one. And that concludes these recaps for Manchester City and Fulham. Stay tuned for the weekend recaps that will be coming up next. We have the Manchester City and Fulham's Wednesday ones, and also that concludes that. We now move on to our
second half of this week's Premier League coverage. First, we're going to begin with Manchester City's game versus Everton on Wednesday on the road at Goodison Park in Liverpool. We just did a recap over the weekend between Fulham and Everton, so now we move to Manchester City and Everton. So I just covered them a few days ago, but now we cover them against a different squad. First for lineups, first for Everton in goal, Jordan Pickford, defenders Mason Holgate, Michael Keane, Yerry Mina, Ben Godfrey, midfielders Lucas Digne, Abula Doucouré, Alex Iwobi, Tom Davies, forwards Richarlison and Keith Sigurdsson. For us, Manchester City's lineup, we have Ederson in goal, defenders Kyle Walker, Ruben Diaz, Emerick Laporte, Joao Cancelo, midfielders Rodrigo, Bernardo Silva, Phil Foden, forwards Raheem Sterling, Gabriel Jesus, and Riyad Mahrez. Those are the starting 11. And Everton have been bit by the injury bug. They've been bit by some things that have hurt them. For a time, they were up there big time in the Premier League table. They were like 4-3, way up there, which is a little too high for them. I didn't think they were being that great this year. And they've kind of fallen back down to earth where more believable in the table. They are in 7th as we speak right now, which is very good. That's nothing to be ashamed of. But it's different than they were when they were like way up there on the table. And we're going to go with my thoughts and opinions on the match. The first substitution occurred early in the 18th minute when Yerry Mina was taken off for Seamus Coleman. This was due to injury. Yerry Mina had to leave because of an injury, so Seamus Coleman came on to the pitch to replace him. In the 32nd minute, the scoring happened when Phil Foden got a right foot shot from the center of the box past Jordan Pickford. And the thing that's different between this match and Fulham's match against Everton is Jordan Pickford didn't play in goal in that game. It was Olsen, the Swede, who did, a guy from Sweden. And it was different to see Pickford instead, who normally starts. So I was curious to see why he didn't play against Fulham, but maybe he was injury, maybe he was good to go, but he was able to start for this one. And Foden got on the board. He's been great for us these past 2 years. I'm a really big fan of him. He's looking good, he's a really young guy, and he's still learning, still improving every day, but great to see him get on the board. 1-0. Then Everton came right back in the 37th minute when Richarlison got a very close shot past Ederson, and Everton needs Richarlison to score to have big success. They need Jordan Pickford to be locked down in defense. They need all their guys to move at a great level. And they got on the board 1-1. Richarlison drew at 1. Then moved to halftime 1-1. Second half began, and there were some shots attempted by both sides. Some attempts missed. Gabriel Jesus had a great shot in the 55th minute that was just wide. Sigurdsson had one in that same minute that was so close, but so far. And there was one in the 61st minute. Rodrigo had a header so close, but it was too far to the left, and it was not to be. But 2 minutes later, Riyad Mahrez got a left foot shot outside the box past Pickford, assisted by Bernardo Silva. Great job by Mahrez. It's looking like the team might draw at 2-1-1 at this point based on highlights and Twitter stuff I've seen. But Mahrez got us to take a 2-1 lead. Great job by Riyad Mahrez. He hasn't scored in a while, so I was glad to see him get a goal again. Then it is the classic substitution time when Joshua King came in for Alex Iwobi, James Rodriguez came in for Tom Davies. And in 77th minute, the game was put to bed by Bernard Silva. Got a great shot, assisted by Gabriel Jesus, passed Pickford to give us a 3-1 lead. And then we had some substitutions late with Kevin De Bruyne coming in for Raheem Sterling. Great to see him back. Hopefully he's healthy and ready to go after being out for a while. And then Manchester City also, one last one, Fernandinho came in for Rodrigo. And that was all she wrote. 3-1 win for us. Great job for City. Stay in first in the Premier League table. Now 56 points. We're 10 points ahead of the next best, which is Manchester United and Leicester City. That was also our 10th win in a row in the Premier League. So two 10s. Now let's move on to the next game, which is Fulham and Burnley at Turf Moor, home of Burnley. This one was a big win. Looking opportunity for Fulham. We beat Everton. Can we beat Burnley on the road at Turf Moor, which we never do? I don't know if we've ever won at Turf Moor. We probably might have, but I wouldn't say very many times if we have. Our history there is very bad. And lineups. First for Burnley. In goal, Nick Pope. Defenders, Matthew Lawton, Charlie Taylor, James Trasky, Kevin Lawn. Midfielders, Jack Quirk, Joan Goodmanson, Dwight McGill, Essie Westwood. Forwards, Ashley Barnes and Jay Rodriguez. For Fulham, in goal, Alphonse. Defenders, Kenny Tete, Joakim Anderson, Tosin, Olania. Midfielders, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, Maria Lamina, Admiral Lookman, and Harrison Reed. And forwards, Bobby Reed and Josh Maja in his second start for the club, who was our magic guy against Everton, scored 2 goals in that match. Could he get us on the board again with his 3rd goal for the club? But let's not get too crazy. He's brand new. He's young. He's just getting acclimated to the Premier League. He is not a veteran in the top flight. This was a defensive battle, and Everton probably could have played better, but they were hit by injury. So Burnley, what were they going to play against us? And Burnley, very defensive. They allow goals, probably a little bit more than some of the clubs we've played lately. But in this one, their defense was pretty much locked down. And ours, besides one devastating mistake after halftime, looked pretty good as well. And we went back to the classic Scott Parker. Don't have that many opportunities on the net, but we didn't allow that many opportunities for the opposing side. So it ended up a classic for us these days. 1-1 draw, very common for us. And the first goal happened 49th minute when Olania, defenseman, he played well against Everton, and he also played well in this one, getting a goal. He had assist in that Everton match. And Olania, off a brilliant cross by Joakim Anderson, got it into Olania. And after a couple of bumps, bouncing, is kicked in by Olania. 1-0 lead for us. Great job, Olania. But a few minutes later, we only had the lead for a few minutes. Ashley Barnes got a goal to take it 1-1. This was a big mistake. Tosin and Arbayo, so Tosin and Lookman, they had a chance to get past J. Rodriguez, but J. Rodriguez did some little fancy footwork. He got past them, then a brilliant pass to Ashley Barnes, and Barnes one-on-one with Alphonse Areola. He was not to be denied, easily passed him. There was nothing Alphonse could do, and 1-1 was the score. That ended up being the final score, a 1-1, classic Fulham. We didn't lose, didn't win. It was a substitution late, But overall, pretty boring game. At least we got a point to stay in 18th spot still. And we now move to 19 points. And we are 6 points behind Newcastle, who is the next closest to us. And we are still a little far from Burnley as well, who got the draw, so they moved one more point up in the table to 15th. That concludes these recaps for this week. Thanks so much for listening to the Premier League recaps. Greatly enjoyed doing them. We have two more for episode 61 coming out in the future. And this is episode 60's Premier League recaps. And upcoming stuff we have for this week's episode is talking about Jake Arrieta going back to the Cubs, talking about Bulls Blackhawks stuff, maybe recap a few games for them, one or two each, not too many. And also talk about probably the Australian Open, maybe. We talk about Vita Jackson's really sad passing and more. Stay tuned. All right. Our next segment for episode 60. This, I'm not really sure the word for this. I wouldn't say excited. I wouldn't say angry. I guess I'd say neutral. Former 2015 Cy Young Award winner, one-time All-Star, threw two no-hitters, won the 2016 World Series for the Chicago Cubs. His very own Jake Arrieta has returned to the North Side after being on the Philadelphia Phillies for 3 seasons. And when he left the Cubs, there was talk, was it going to be Jake Arrieta or Yu Darvish? Which one were they going to sign? And as it went down, we signed Yu Darvish, and Jake Arrieta left to Philadelphia, where his time there was plagued by explosive injuries. He had many injuries over in Philly, and he was never really the same. In Chicago, he looked so great in 2015, 2016. But once he went to Philly, he just looked decimated by injuries, and his velocity was far less than it used to be. And his velocity now isn't that great. He is older, in his mid-30s. So let's see what he brings to the table. And this rotation, now that Yu Darvish is gone and John Lester is gone, it was pretty much set that Kyle Hendricks would be the ace, so the first starter. Then the second starter would probably be, before Jake Arrieta signed, I would have said Zach Davies, probably the guy we got in the Darvish trade. Then it would be Trevor Williams, the soft-throwing righty from the Pirates, and then Alec Mills, who threw a no-hitter for the Cubs last season, as the fifth starter. Now that Jake Arrieta has joined, I guess I would say the second starter, just because he gives a different look than Zach Davies based on his nasty breaking pitches. But if they did Davies in front of Arrieta, I wouldn't be surprised. And that's the starting five for the Cubs, which is not the greatest. But now they have Jake Arrieta, because of his depth, and it looks a little bit better than it would have without Jake Arrieta. We would have had to start Edbert Alzolay instead. He would have been in the rotation, a young guy up and coming. But he gets some more time as bullpen guy or in AAA, depending on when that starts. And the Cubs are in a bad division, so getting him helps in the bad division. It's probably going to be a battle between the Cardinals and Cubs, with the Brewers, Reds a little bit behind, and then the Pirates way behind. And I probably would with gut say the Cardinals win the division, but if the Cubs were close, I wouldn't be surprised. But based on my gut feeling, I think only one team is going to make the playoffs out of this division, the division winner. I don't think a wild card team is coming out of the NL Central based on the squads, the roster makeup and pitching and offense and overall teams. This is kind of like an old AL Central when, of the former years, when the AL Central was the butt of jokes in the worst division. Now the NL Central is that. But it could prove me wrong. I don't know. Maybe one of these teams will light up baseball, but based on my indications, I would say no. And last note before we end this segment, he was not the only former Cub to re-sign. Former closer, reliever, one of my favorites on the Cubs, Pedro Strop, has joined the Cubs after a number of years away. Kind of funny, they mentioned it on the Cubs Talk podcast listening to today. David Kaplan, Gordon Whitmire, Matt Ely, and Tim Stebbins mentioned it's funny that Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop are back on the Cubs after a while away, just like 2013 when they first joined the Cubs in the trade for Scott Feldman. They're back on the Cubs. And it's a definitely different Cubs team. That team was getting better, improving, still young. This team, more veteran-laden. And the upside isn't as great as them, but I would probably say this might be a playoff team, but we'll see. So I think that concludes my Cubs talk for this week. I know we haven't been doing the Cubs talk that often, but it's the offseason, and if they don't sign a new player or make a big trade, there's not a lot to talk about the Cubs. Or the White Sox, they haven't done anything in a few weeks either. But spring training started, so we might talk a little bit about that once it gets going and gets closer to the start of official spring training games, because right now it's just like the training camp portion.